Welcome to Season 3 of Busting Addiction and Its Myths, sponsored by Safe House Rehab Thailand, where we offer a modern approach to recovery, breaking with tradition by introducing new technologies that help disrupt the cycle of addiction. To learn more, visit us at safehouserehab.com and click on the video, or contact us at info@safehouserehab.com, and we'll tell you about our $1,000 airfare allowance and referral rewards program. My name is Bruno J., and here's why I created this podcast. Our research has shown that despite the opioid epidemic and the worldwide panic over the ravages of addiction, we didn't see that treatment centers were doing anything different to break the cycle more effectively and improve the odds of long-term success. So we have set out to do things differently and to let all those who love an addict or alcoholic know more about the advances in treatment that we represent. Here's what we're doing differently. We have designed our diagnostics and detox to isolate and treat opioid and multi-addiction, example, alcohol plus opioids plus speed, more effectively, given that these are the new challenges of addiction in the 21st century. We integrate leading-edge technology into the recovering process, thereby disrupting the disorder, speeding the recovery of brain health. Clients come to treatment with damaged brains. This is a given. We pay attention to the importance of dopamine and other ingredients vital to brain health recovery. Traditional rehabs don't provide anywhere near the tools and close guidance that clients truly need to help keep them clean and sober for life. We do it right. First, we advise our clients to go into our sober living facility to serve as a transition to normal life, and we absolutely outperform traditional rehabs when it comes to providing a structure for long-term recovery. So if you love an addict or alcoholic and you feel like your loved one is sucking the oxygen out of your life, is stealing your money, stealing your peace of mind and your sanity, this podcast is for you. If you're feeling rage and shame and he or she is living rent-free in your head 24/7, this podcast is for you. I hope to have you gain a better understanding of the nature of addictive disorder and the invisible effect it has on your psyche. It's my fervent hope you also gain a little more compassion for your loved one and for yourself, in spite of this cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. To paraphrase an author in this space, we struggle because we love. Hey, Bruno J. here, and a warm welcome to Episode 3 of Season 3, Part 2. So picking up where we left off momentarily, you saw the light, if you will. You were in this place for 7 months, and then after 7 months, what transpired?
Moved to the second stage, which was called re-entry back then.
Okay.
Re-entry, which is re-entry into the community, mm-hmm. in a house with about 10 to a dozen other people. We used to be checked on twice a week. We all had to have a purpose. Mine was going to polytechnic, college, call it mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. I got myself a diploma in social and community care. Great.
That's pretty good.
The only problem was that back then it was what they called a concept program. And the concept of this particular program, if alcohol was not your primary substance, they would allow you what they called a drinking diary after you've been there 2 months. So a drinking diary would consist of starting you off on 6 units, give a count for those 6 units when you come to the meeting on a Monday night or a Wednesday night, and then you would progress to 12 units, not knowing anything about addiction.
What's a unit?
A unit.
Yeah.
It's a unit, it's the way they measure alcohol.
Okay.
So
1 ounce is a unit maybe?
No, it's done via the percentage of alcohol in what you're drinking.
Okay.
If you get tested by the police, over a certain number of units, then you are illegally
okay.
driving.
Okay.
And not knowing I was an addict, I said, yeah, put my hand up for that. I'll have 6 units and I'll have 12 units, you know.
And they raised it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. If you manage. The thing was, we colluded. There was 10 to 12 of us. So what the truth was that come a Wednesday night when we got our money, which was benefits or social, got money from the government.
Some currency.
Yeah. We'd all go down the pub, get drunk, and then come the next meeting, we'd tell stories about how we only drank 6 units.
Okay.
Yeah. But I didn't understand that one was too many and 1,000 never enough then. I had no idea. And I didn't know that you could transfer addiction from one substance to another. This was all...
Right. It's all new to you.
It wasn't even new to me at that point.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the bottom line was I came out with a qualification, but I was still intoxicated. Mm-hmm. I was still under the influence. I was still in trouble, really. Mm-hmm. And it became apparent very quickly. I got employed very quickly because I was a person of colour. I was a person who recovered from crack cocaine. So many of the drug agencies were only too willing to give me a job. So I got a job.
Oh, sure.
So, and I'd learnt a lot going through treatment. So I'd learnt, as you do in therapeutic communities, to spot that the shortcomings in your fellow client or fellow peers.
Yeah.
So, and that's what the job was. Is people come in with their problems. I go, oh, yeah, this is... But the only problem was I hadn't solved my own problem.
Yeah.
And luckily, I got lucky and got myself a job in Jamaica, which kind of saved me for a while.
Okay.
I was out there between 6 and 9 months. Didn't use crack, didn't use anything. Maybe had a bit of alcohol every now and again, but everything was manageable.
Okay. And what motivated you to, like, stop doing that?
Fear.
Okay.
Fear.
Fear of what?
Fear of getting out of control.
Okay.
Fear of going to places in Jamaica that I didn't know.
Okay.
Fear of being detected because people within the rehab would know people. It's a very small island and people know.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. People know each other.
All right. Especially you didn't want to be found out.
I didn't want to be found out. Okay. So that's what kept me. So okay. I came back to England, beginning of 92. Everything fell apart. Everything fell apart. I went from Manchester to Sheffield, from Sheffield to Birmingham, from Birmingham to London. And by the time I got to London, I made my first NA meeting, 12-step meeting, June the 30th, 1992.
Okay.
And I was holding on for dear life then. Okay. I was holding on for dear life. I'd left a lot of wreckage behind me between February and June in each of those cities. You know, I'd stole, I'd lied, I'd cheated. I'd even sliced, cut my wrists out of desperation.
Okay.
It was a real bad time for me at that time. Okay. Found at NA in 92, and that was the beginning for me of recovery, really.
Where were you? Tell me about, go back your timeline. Where do your children come into this picture? Was this after you had your kids or before?
No, all this is in the presence of my children.
Okay.
I think me and the partner had split up in 86.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Got the years right.
Yeah, we split up in 86, so I had intermittent contact with them. And because they were involved in my business as well.
Oh, sure.
The mother was, and children used to go out and do a little bit of work with. So they were around.
So 92 is the beginning.
Yeah, 92 is the beginning of when I started to turn things around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me what that took. Tell me what...
Again, it took a rehab.
Okay.
Rehab, 13 weeks in another draconian 12-step rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not another. It was draconian, but not another 12-step. Probably my first introduction to... But prior to that, I'd had 6 months in the rooms of NA... And I picked up bits and pieces.
Okay. And NA is Narcotics Anonymous.
Narcotics Anonymous. Picked up some bits and pieces. So by the time I got to the rehab, I was Mr. Know-it-all. Plus with my qualification in social and community care. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I was a know-it-all. Okay. You know? And I think I was 5 weeks in and they said, well, you know, either you get on or you get out.
What do they mean by get on or get out?
Well, I was telling other people what... I was again telling other people what they should do and what they shouldn't do.
Okay.
Plus, I was undermining process in the rehab.
Okay. So when they say get on, they mean...
Get on the program or get out the door. Yeah.
Get with it or get on.
Get with it or get out. And I was petrified.
So what did you end up doing? You ended up getting with it?
I got with it, man.
Yeah, sure.
I got with it.
Yeah. No more screwing around. This is it, right?
Yeah. But again, it was, you know, in hindsight, I see that I always learnt to play, I suppose, the long game, but always learnt the art of compliance. Mm-hmm. Always learn.
Go through the motions.
Yeah, go through the motions, do what's necessary. And my story is one of 5 years in recovery and then relapsing.
Okay.
You know, which was very traumatic.
97 or something like that?
98. Okay. Yeah, yeah, 98. Okay. Very traumatic for myself and especially for my children.
How long were you out? How long were you, quote, out there?
It took me a year to get the clean time I have today.
Okay.
I didn't use anywhere near a year. I did another rehab. Mm-hmm. I did two rehabs in that space of time. If I used for 3 months of that 1 year, I'm probably being generous.
Okay.
But at the same time, every time I use, it was soul destroying.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time. Again, knowing better, but not being able to do better.
So observe this, what we talk about as a progressive disease. By that I mean, let's say that, you know, you relapse and it's worse than it ever was. And each time you go back out, it's worse than it ever was. Was that true for you?
For me, in the sense of psychologically, paranoia, psychosis,
okay,
mental health.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Financially, materially, no.
Okay.
But in those...
What was going on inside was completely...
What was going inside, yeah.
Okay. I switched gears a little bit with you, and that is this notion that, you know, an alcoholic or addict has to bottom out before, you know, they're ready for help, and that the parent or the loved one can't do anything about it. What is the influence? What influence do you suppose a parent or a loved one could have on an alcoholic or addict in their family to try to help them? What has to take place, or what?
Well, my experience of that is that I have 3 of the 6 of my children are addicted.
Okay.
So my experience of that is that, I don't know.
Okay. Well, okay. So just just set it up a little differently. If a parent comes to you as a counselor and they go, you know, Bobby is just, I'm really worried about him. He's living at home, but, you know, his grades have gone to hell. I think he's smoking marijuana. And then I caught him the other day and he was, you know, on his crack pipe. What does one say to not to the addict himself, because he's probably not listening, maybe not ready. What do you say to a parent? What do you counsel them to do?
Well, I'd suggest is that they need to get some help from themselves first,
right,
and foremost.
Okay, that's where I'm going.
Yeah.
Okay.
What I'd suggest is that they need to make some boundaries, put some boundaries in place, communicate those boundaries to,
okay,
Johnny or whatever her name may be.
Right.
Stick to them.
Right.
Which we call tough love.
Right.
And if he or she doesn't adhere, then separation has to take place.
Okay.
The longer you adhere,
right,
to, yeah, their behavior, things will just become...
Have you ever been painful. Involved in an intervention?
Oh, yes.
So talk about those. Talk about what works, what doesn't work.
I mean, my two boys, they both different. The older one is functioning. Was functioning or is functioning or function. So he was kind of easier to work with.
How old was when you...
On some level, he was much older when I discovered him because of his functioning behaviour and because, obviously, he didn't live at home, that only came about when his wife complained to his mother about his domestic violence.
Okay.
That we became apparent. We became aware of his alcoholism.
Did they have children too?
Yes.
Okay.
No, the lady in question doesn't. He doesn't have. He has children with.
Okay.
The first
but he's
mother.
A father.
He's a father. The younger one, we knew he was using from the get-go. We supported him, even to the extent of going out and buying him heroin, locking him in, keeping him, moving away to another place.
Got it.
Paying for him to go into treatment.
Okay.
He's done treatment twice.
Did you all see what you were doing at that point?
No, not no. really. No, okay. No. We kind of, even me as an addict, fell for.
Oh yeah, sure.
The whole,
yeah.
He's gonna get right. Well. He just needs
were
encouragement.
Were you clean and sober when this was happening?
Yeah, 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 yeah,
of course, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
Funny, because he came to stay with me. The first time he went into treatment, he came to stay with me because the mother couldn't put up with him. And I think he had like 4, 5, 6 weeks before his funding kicked in. So his mother says he's got to come and stay with me. So he came and stayed with me. He lasted 4 weeks. And a week before he went to treatment, I had to send him back to his mother because of his behavior.
So you said you did do an intervention with him. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, and what was that? What was that? Did you have a
Sent him back to his mother.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sent him back to his mother.
Okay.
And he found his way back. He found his way into treatment.
Okay.
And he was in treatment.
All right.
And he did the whole, what's the name? I went to his family. Okay. Nobody else would go. I went to his family counselling.
Sure.
Whatever. Sure. Listened to his shit. Listened right. to all his, what's the name? Worked out a plan with the counsellor.
Yeah.
And used it again.
Okay.
You know, and really from that point, we've never had the same relationship.
Okay. Did he end up recovering or?
No. He came back to that treatment facility maybe 3 or 4 years later.
Wow.
And did the same thing again.
Oh, man.
And then went again. And now last year, both the boys, both of them were incarcerated for an attempted murder. One got 27 years.
Oh my God.
The other one got 36 years.
Oh my God.
So oh my God. That is so the, that's where the their addiction has taken
that's
them.
That's where their addiction yeah. has taken them. Well, I want to talk a little bit about powerlessness and what a parent or a loved one can actually do. And as a grateful member of Al-Anon myself, I know that on the walls it often says, you didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rather absolute statement, isn't it? And what do you think that reflects? I mean, what is that sentiment? What's the sentiment behind that idea? What is it intended to have people understand?
Well, they're not responsible, but the fact is, for most parents, I know for me, and having listened to many parents, the first line there is the guilt, the believing that you caused it.
Okay.
You know. And right. for me, it was difficult because obviously my life was, there were parts of my life which were chaotic. There were parts of my life where I was not emotionally available.
Okay.
Could have done better, didn't do better.
Okay.
Could have been a better father, but wasn't a better father.
Sure.
But came back to address all of that stuff by making amends and being available okay. consistently over a consistent okay. length of time. But the damage was done.
Damage was done. Yeah, but you were doing this for yourself, right? And that was part of your recovery.
Yeah.
What about the "you can't control it" part? What does that? What does that say? And relative to somebody else's addiction?
No, you cannot control somebody else's addiction. There's no way. If the individual can't control the addiction,
How can you?
What would make you think you could
right.
control
right.
that individual's addiction?
What does control look like? I mean, what are some of the manifestations of the attempt to control? What are?
Well, I did a television, a morning, early morning TV show as a counsellor, and the father had two sons that were addicts, and he'd locked them up in a barn.
Okay.
He chained them in the barn.
Well, there's control.
Fed them. And of course, both of them escaped.
Of course.
Yeah. So that's...
That's control.
That's control.
Yeah. As in, no, not. And then you can't cure it. What does that tell you? Because this is on the wall of most Al-Anon.
Yeah, I mean, we come to understand that it's a disease.
Right.
It's a disease that can be arrested.
But not cured.
Can't be cured.
Okay.
It's something...
And yeah. part of that too, and I mean to interrupt, but it's like it's speaking to me. I'm new, okay, let's say I'm new to Al-Anon. Everything is new. I realize that I'm not here to, ultimately, I realize I'm not here to help the alcoholic or addict get sober or any of that. I'm here for me. And then you present me with this, you know, you didn't cause it, you can't control it, you can't cure it kind of thing, just as a reminder that you're completely powerless.
Powerless.
And so when you surrender to that, then you have to take the next step and obviously find another power.
Mm.
I want to get to another topic, which is the illusion or the myth that addicts or alcoholics are weak-willed or they have a moral failing, they're morally degraded. Or it's just a question of saying no. Can you address that sort of those societal myths?
No, none of those things are true. I mean, I've lived my life, and I mean, I decided to give up crime, and I just gave up crime. You know, I've decided to do this, and I've done it. And most things in my life, I've decided to do,
right,
and fulfilled. You know, with willpower, I have strong will. You know. I have a belief outside of myself that there's a power greater than me,
right,
that takes care of me and looks after right. everything, you know. So it's easy. It's an easy thing to put those labels on people, you know.
Right.
It's easy because it kind of makes it easier for
sure
everybody to deal right. with it,
as if they had a choice, right?
Yeah, I mean that's a classic one, isn't it? Well, he had a choice. Why doesn't he just stop?
Yeah.
How many times are you going to do it?
Right.
Why don't you just give it up?
Don't understand the concept of a disease, right? A compulsive disease. Just to sort of close this up, is what do you think are the major factors in an alcoholic or addict achieving long-term sobriety? What are the major pillars to that goal or to that state? And by long term, I'm talking about, like you know, years and years and living a life and making good decisions and, you know, being in a good zone most of the time and all that.
I think the first thing for me, having done the concept house before, and I remember getting to this concept house and introducing me to the community.
Right.
And they says, these people will be your friends for the rest of your life.
Right.
And I looked around the room with my street head, looked at their trainers, looked at their jackets. I just said, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But what I come to find years later, that the main thing that I need is support. I need support. I need support. I need support.
Okay.
And with support becomes all the other good stuff that I've found.
All right.
You know, like discipline, spirituality.
Okay, discipline, spirituality. How about, I think discipline and this other word are connected, but how about commitment? How about an all or nothing game, as I call it?
Well, it's very difficult to be disciplined if you don't have commitment. I think my first sponsor used to say to me, commitment, consistency, and continuity, the three C's.
Okay.
You get the three C's and you'll be sorted.
You'll be fine.
Yeah.
And you mentioned spirituality and belief in a power greater than ourselves. Everybody has a different concept of that. What is your concept?
My concept?
Yes.
Ooh, that's deep.
All right.
That's deep.
Don't go too far. I don't want to go over that. But in terms of, you know, how you define your relationship.
My relationship with a power greater than myself, I can't do it. That by allowing myself to accept that I am not God, that I am not the be-all, end-all.
Okay.
It allows me to have humility.
Okay.
It allows me to have compassion.
Right.
It allows me to see myself in others.
Okay.
And believe that I'm no different from anybody else. Everybody has weaknesses.
Right.
Everybody has shortcomings.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but living by a set of, I call it the living by a set of principles as opposed to my instincts, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but again, for me, I mean, I'm 12 steps, and 12 steps has helped support me. But as late, I like four commitments. I love the four commitments.
Okay, tell us about the four commitments.
The four commitments are be impeccable with your word.
Okay.
Don't take anything personally.
Okay.
Don't make assumptions.
Okay.
And always do your best.
There you go. Well, that's a hell of a way to close this thing. Robert, he's a man, a fine British gentleman.
If you can do that, you're a better man than me.
Well, I'll tell you, every day, too.
Every day.
Every day.
Don't take anything personal.
All right, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to leave the audience today before we closed a lot? And I want to tell you, we always learn a lot from you, and that today I learned a lot that I didn't even know. And you're a great inspiration.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Long live Safe House.
There you go.
Thank you for tuning in today. It's my fervent hope we've given you new insight and new hope that will lighten your burden. For
where our hearts go out to all who suffer the effects of addictive disorder. Please give us your feedback at info@safehouserehab.com. By all means, ask us any question you like, and we'll answer on air if you will. And if you want to leave us your first name and city, we'll recognize you too, of course. This podcast is sponsored by safehouserehab.com, where we take a modern approach to recovery, something all families of those who suffer deserve. Tune in next week for more.